Okay, we're going to begin here at the bottom of Samach Daled Amud Beis. We'll just continue with the Mishnah. We read the Mishnah yesterday, but I just took over it because the Gemara today deals with this Mishnah. Motzei meit b'tchila mushkav kedarko. So a person finds a mate that's lying out mushkav kedarko in a normal fashion. The Gemara will see what that means in the normal fashion. Note lo, you take away this mate v'et tfusato, and that which is around it. The Gemara will discuss how much is tfusato. There are different gersot here, whether it's tfusato or tivusato with a vet. But either way, the meaning, the general meaning here is that which is captured or taken by the mate, and not just the mate itself, but even the surrounding dirt around the mate. So now, shnayim notlan vets tfusatan. If he finds two corpses that are laid out or buried in this area, then he can remove both of them and their tfusan, that which the dirt that's around them. Matzash losha. But if he already hits three corpses that are buried in this area, imish ben lazela zemidalada motach mana. If it has between each one of them, it's either each one of them, or it seems more likely the Perush that Tosfos brings down here, that according to the Rabbeinu Tam, it means there's between the three of them. I mean, the three are separated by the beginning of one to the beginning of the next. So the third one was four amot or eight amot. Then, harzeh shchunat kvarot. This looks like a beta kvarot. If it's a beta kvarot, then the meitim are koneh their makom. They belong there. And since they have already been koneh makom, you cannot remove them from that area. So basically what we're talking about here is that a person is digging in a field. He finds a mate. And when he finds a mate in the field, the question is whether this mate that was buried there was intended to be buried there, and this is his final resting place. Or was this just a temporary stop? I mean, they buried the mace there because either they ran out of time or because it was a unusual circumstance, or it's possibly a non-Jew that's buried here. In all those instances, the person has the right to remove the mace. So here, where we don't have any knowledge or any foreknowledge about what took place here, the assumption is that you find one corpse or two corpses, the assumption is that they were buried there temporarily. Since this was not known as a Beit HaKvarot, we don't assume that there is a cemetery here. But once we hit three corpses already, and they're lined up, or they're situated in such a manner that makes us think that this is a Beit HaKvarot, then we think they were intentionally placed there. If they're intentionally placed there, we no longer have a right to remove them from that location. Now, what is the 48 Amot? The 48 Amot has to do with the Mishnah it's the Mishnah at the end of the fifth parak of Baba Basra. Over there, it describes how they used to bury their Meitim. They used to bury their Meitim in caves. The caves were machlokas there between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, whether the caves were 6 by 8 Amot or 4 by 6 Amot. And then those caves had around them, that open area of the cave on the edges had kuchim, had little tomes that went into the walls, into the bedrock. And they used to bury the people in that bedrock in the walls. So you either have it 4 by 6 or 6 by 8. Now, not only was there one cave there was also a central hallway, which was 6 by 6 amot. And we'll see that the Rush brings down maybe it's possibly 4 by 4 amot. But there's a central cave, and off of that central area where they used to come in, there were caves to either side, or even in four directions possibly. The Mishnah in Baba Basra talks about that had these dimensions of 4 by 6 or 6 by 8, depending on the Chacham and Reb Shimon. So now what we're talking about here, the 4 or 8 amot, when you find the three meitim within 4 amot or within 8 amot, we're trying to figure out, we're assuming that they either buried the rochav to the width of the cave or the orech to the length of the cave. And since the caves are 6 by 8 amot, right, we're looking at the cave and saying, well, if there are three bodies within the context of 6 amot or 8 amot, or 4 amot to 8 amot, then we can assume that they were buried in this cave-like manner. And once we've done that, once we've established that maybe there is a Beit HaKvarot here, but documental halan is 3 mamah. We check from that mate, the ends of the mate, 20 amot. Whether you have to check in every direction or not, depends here, the machlokas that we've shown him. Some of the shown believe that once you found these three mateim, you check in all directions 20 amot. Others shown believe, the Rush brings down here, that you only have to check in the direction of their feet, meaning that since Jews were always buried with their feet towards the center of the cave, then the assumption of where the other cave was is only from their feet outward, not from their sides of their head. So you have to check the 20 amot from their feet. What are we worried about? Why are we checking 20 amot? 20 amot is to see if there was another cave. I mean, based on the dimensions that we had here, you had this center cave that was 6 by 6 amot, and then you have two outer caves. The two outer caves are, according to Rabbi Shimon, 6 by 8. In that case, according to Rabbi Shimon, you really should have to check 22 amot. That's what the Gemara Baba Basra asks. And according to Chamim, that there are 4 by 6 amot, then you should only have to check 18 amot. The Gemara there in Baba Basra gives there two possibilities. Either according to Chamim Balakhson, that it's on an angle, the hypotenuse of a triangle. I mean, yes, if you went straight, the center cave is 6 amot, and the two outer caves are 6 amot deep, that gets you 18 amot. But if you went from one corner of a cave to the other corner of the cave, you would get 20 amot. So you're checking that diagonal to see if you found these metim over here, you're checking the diagonal to see if they're metim in the cave on the opposite side. Or according to Bishimo, they used to make two sides caves. They used to make caves on one side that were 6x8, and a cave on the other side that are 4x6, because they used to bury grown men or women in the bigger cave, the 6x8 cave, and then they used to bury the Nephilim right in the smaller cave. If you have that, then you have a central cave of 6 amot. You have one cave that has 8 amot deep, which is 14, and then you have another cave on the other side, which is only 6 amot deep, and that'll make you 20 amot. So according to Bishimon, that'll be the 20 amot. So either way, the 20 amot, or the purpose of checking the 20 amot, is to establish that this isn't like the normal cave layout or setup that we normally find. Because we found these three, now we assume that maybe there's a much bigger complex here, so we're checking to make sure that there isn't a bigger complex. Now, if they found they find another mace at the end of that 20 amot, but they came menu halan esrim amot, then from that one mace you have to check another 20 amot to make sure, again, that we're not within a larger cemetery or a larger cave structure to ensure that these are the only mace that we have in this area. But shiraglaim ledavar, because now we have evidence. Since we found the three first, now we have overwhelming evidence that there is a Beit HaKvarot here, and then we bump into this one, he's enjoined to those to be a part of a Beit HaKvarot, and we don't assume that he is just a single mace that was buried in Arai or in a temporary location. Sheilu Tchila Matzo, because if he came from the other side and he had just bumped into this one mace first, not lo et tfusato, you would take it, and it's tfusa, you would remove this mace, and it would have no impact, it wouldn't be impacted by the other three because he hadn't found the other three yet. Only because you came from the other side, which had the three, that's Raglaim Ledavar, there's overwhelming evidence that there is a problem here, a problem being that there's a Beit HaKvarot. Once there's a Beit HaKvarot, we don't let you move this single mace, and you have to check from him and beyond. Now, the reason this Mishnah is brought here and all the Mishnahs that are coming up is because of this context called Raglaim Ledavar. In all these situations where we have Raglaim Ledavar, we have overwhelming evidence that something has happened, and that's what we just had in Nazir. The Nazir was Bechesta Tara versus Chesed Tuma, whether there's Raglaim Ledavar, that something had happened by Tumas Hatihom. Same thing over here. The Mishnahs that we're about to bring, all of them are found in their locations in the other Masechtot, but they're brought here, are brought together here, because they all have this common context or thread of Raglaim Ledavar. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda says on our Mishnah, it says, Masa Prat Limatsui. Right, that he found, these mitim were found. Prat is something that was known about already. So what does that mean? What does that come to exclude when it's known about already? So the Ri says that if it was known, then you're not allowed to move it. Because that's the general halacha. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that if you find a mace that's buried intentionally in a place, it's asur lifnoto, you're not allowed to move him out of his grave. So if this grave was already known about, then there's nothing to talk about moving it. It's only masa, when you find it by circumstance, by chance, that you come across it, then we say there's a possibility of moving it. But it was well known, not. Whereas the Rashbam over here gives the interpretation that means masa, prata matsui, means that only when you find them, three of them, in a position, meaning that you didn't know about these three before, and then you find them here, is it considered Beit HaKvarot? Whereas if you find two of them, and you knew about one before, that makes up the three, then that's not considered Beit HaKvarot, and that's actually a Gemara we're going to see in a little bit, that the Gemara excludes situations in which all three were either not known about beforehand, or all three of them were found now. So that's the explanation of the Rashbam. The Ri and others have a question on that, because then what do you have to say, Hamotzei, in our Mishnah, that he found them? It has nothing to do with finding them, because if he knew about them, beforehand, it also wouldn't be a Beit HaKvarot. So they reject that pshat, and they use the pshat of the Ri, that the differentiation between Matzah and Matsui here is, if it's known, then you cannot remove it, whereas if it's found, then you can remove it. Now, mate, the next word in the Mishnah is mate. Mate is prat leharug, problem of someone who is killed. If someone was killed, they are not tofes mikomo. Why are they not tofes mikomo? So that, the Tosfos brings over here, and so does the Rosh over here explain what's the problem with mace, that Harug, that he is chaser, right? He's missing some part of his body. Why doesn't he have, what is he missing here? Mace chaser in lo shkunat kvarot. That someone who is missing a part of their body, if they were killed and is missing a part of their body, they don't have a din of shkunat kvarot. So Tosfos over here says, kashalavim? That doesn't make, what's the reason? Meaning, there's no reason to believe just because the mace is missing some part of their body that this wasn't a cemetery. Where do you bury people who are missing parts? You have to bury them in the cemetery anyway. So he, over here, it also says, Yoshema Allah Kalamosh Misinahu. Said, maybe this is Allah Kalamosh Misinahu. There's a similar Tosfos under an Aleph on base. Tosfos has the same question over there about Mace Shechazer. There it says that there's no rekeb by Mace Shechazer. There it says, the Tarachiyun. Lama im tam shkunat kvarot mishum chashasha the duma yashem beta kvarot. Says you have to. We don't understand this. If the whole problem, and we find a mace, is that there's maybe there's a cemetery here. Him being chaser should not retract from it. Afke echad chaser nami nechush. Why shouldn't you be chashish? The im hu alach l'moshe misinai mutav. Says from a logical standpoint, I can't understand it. But if you say it's alach l'moshe misinai mutav, then I can't say anything. That you must, and then that's what you must have to say. So over here too, Tosfos makes the same point. That what? That he doesn't understand it. It must be. Over here he says it must be a halacha l'moshe misinai. Otherwise that halacha is not necessarily understandable. Mushkav. Right? Our Mishnah said mushkav, that he was laying down. Pras le'yoshev. Someone was buried yoshev. Either because that meant it was a temporary grave, meaning that they were put there in haste, or because Jews are not buried in that manner. Kidarko. What does that mean, kidarko? Right, kedarko is the way the Jews bury them. Prat l'shirosho munach ben yireh chultav. That's not someone buried in the fetal position. Again, buried in the fetal position is not the way normal Jewish burial. So either this person is not a Jew, or the possibility is that it was done in haste, again, because if it was buried properly, if the person was intended to be buried there, they would have been laid out like a normal Jewish burial. Tani ula bar chanina, meit shechaser in lo tvusa v'lo shchunat kivarot. A meit that is missing a part of their body does not have tvusa, and does not have shchunat kevarot. I mean, that's the reasoning. This statement of Ula is the reasoning why the Mefarshim say prat laharuf. Someone who's killed is not considered to be a mace for this reason of beit hakvarot, because they are considered to be chaser. They are missing a part of the body. And since they're missing a part of the body, therefore they are not part of the halacha of shlosha meitim that you find that makes up a beit hakvarot. Kivarot. Again, Tosfos points out that this must be Allah called the Moshe Messina. Tanakh says, "Halachani my time alone." For all these, what's the reason not? So, on which are we asking? So, according to the Rebbe, we're asking on all the items besides Matzah Prat Matzui. Because Matzah, if it's a known kever, we understand why you don't have to worry about it, because you can't move them. There's nothing to talk about over here. But for the other reasons that we meant, with a Chaser and a Mushkav and a Kedarko, why are these excluded from the context of being a Beit HaKvarot? Gemara says, "My time alone, Amrin and Dilma of the Kachavim." We say maybe these are non-Jews, because since Jews are not normally buried in this manner, and since there's a chash that they are not Jews, and there's no cheska chazaka yet that this is a Beit HaKvarot, we assume that these aren't Jewish people that are buried here, and therefore the restrictions to remove them do not apply necessarily. Right now, the Gemara says this clarifies what we said above. The Rashbam's interpretation of what Matzah Prat Matzui means. But this is an independent statement because the Re agrees to the position here that Masashnaim Rosh Shozeh beside Margotov Shozeh. He found two of them head to foot, meaning that they're buried either side by side and one's head is at the foot of the other, or the foot, or they are buried head to foot, meaning they're buried in a line like that. Then we know what? Rosh Shozeh beside Margotov Shozeh, in them Tfusav lo Shkunat Kvarot. They don't have Tfusav, they don't have a Shkunat Kvarot, because we assume that these aren't, this isn't the normal Jewish burial. This isn't the normal way that Jews bury. Since this isn't the way normal way Jews bury, we assume either it was done, again, in haste, and therefore they can be moved because this wasn't intended to be Beit HaKvarot, or secondly, that these are non-Jews, and therefore they don't have the normal application of not moving the kever. Now, Matzah Shlosha, Achad Yadua, Ushnayim Tchila. They found three mates. One of them was known about, one kever was known about, and the other two we find now in this instance. Oh, Shnayim tchila v'shnayim yiduim, that's the gears that we have. The Orach Mishor changes the gears to read Echad tchila v'shnayim yiduim. They found one now, and they knew about two before them. Ein lam tfusa v'ein lam shkunat kivarot. They don't have tfusa or shkunat kivarot. Again, the gears here is changed. The Orach Mishor changes the gears, so does the Rosh. The gears is yesh lam tfisa. They do have tfisa, but ein lam shkunat kivarot. They do have tfisa because they're meitim that are buried there, but they don't have a status of shkunat kivarot. Why don't they have a status of Shkunat Kvarot? So there are two possibilities. Either Mitzvara, there's a logical argument to say that they are not that they're not buried there, it's not a Shkunat Kvarot, and that's brought down by the Rosh. The Rosh brings down a logical argument, says, Kemesh Loayu Shloshtami Yana Chaz, since not three of them are the same type, Ein Tolin Shnikru Sham L'Shem Kever. We don't assume they were buried there L'Shem Beit HaKvarot. And the Tosfos expands on that and says, because had we known, we knew about one mace that was buried there, or we knew about the two, we should have known about the others. The fact that we don't know about the others means that that wasn't intended to be a Beit HaKvarot, because they weren't in the same category, in the same type of burial, because either they would have all been known or all not been known. The fact that some of them are known, some are not known, means that this really wasn't intended to be a Beit HaKvarot. That's Mitzvah Svara. The Tosfos on the other hand brings down another possibility that what? This is just another one of the Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. Halacha Moshe Mitzinai is that only when you have, right, that the Rashbam says this, that it's only Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. When you don't have three, you need three. Either three totally new Mitzinai that we found, or three well-known Mitzinai. In that case, again, Shloshi Yiduim, according to the Reed, doesn't matter, because once they're Yadua, you can't move them anyway. But in either instance, they don't, a signer does not become a Beit HaKvaros, either because it's Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai, or because of the logic that we just explained. Ma'ase b'Rabbi Yishveh, shebodok matza shnayim yiduim ve'achad tchila. That he found two that were known already, and then they found a third mate afterwards that they didn't know about. So he wanted to assign them the title of Shkunat Kvaros, which again would have required a bedika in all the locations, meaning around, in the 20 amot around, plus possibly that you could not remove the mate. So Amar Lo Rabbi Kiva, Koshi Gato Lerikya Gato, all that work that you're going to do for the Shkunat Kvaros, that's for waste. Lo Mer Shkunat Kvaros, the Gimel Yudim, oh, the Shloshat Tchila. The only time that we say a Shkunat Kvaros is when you either have three known. Now again, whether you say three known or not depends on what you think happens to known Meitim that are there. According to the Reed, known Meitim, you don't move anyway, then it doesn't matter if you have one known or three known because it doesn't change the status. Oh, the Shloshat Tchila. But more importantly, which is the second part of this statement, is the Shloshat Tchila. If you find three new Meitim in that location, those are considered a Shkunat Kvaros. But if you have found one or you found two, those don't consider that's mixing and matching the types of Meitim that we're finding, and that does not assign it a shame, Shkunat Kivarot. All right, now continuing now with the Gemara. The Gemara says, and our Mishnah says, Noslo Vet Tfusatan. Hechi Dami Tfusa. What is Tfusa? Where do we know that you have to take not only the mate, but the Adama, the earth that is around it? Amar Yehuda Makro, the Pasuk says, by Yaakov in Mitzrayim, it says in Isnatan, Yimi Mitzrayim. Take me out of Mitzrayim, to me. Right? Take me, and with me, take some of the dirt. How do you know we take some of the dirt with me? Because it says, the Rush says, me Mitzrayim. Take me plus part of Mitzrayim to take me out. The problem, obviously, the difficulty with this Gemara is, since when would we know that Yaakov was ever buried in Mitzrayim? The Gemara implies that here, but it's not clear from the Pesukim that he was buried in Mitzrayim. Rabbi David brought down a Chizkuni. He mentioned that the Chizkuni says that Yaakov Avinu was buried in Mitzrayim, and then he was later on taken out and removed to be taken to Eretz Yisrael. Problem is that the source for these Chizkuni is our Gemara in Nazir. So the Chizkuni wouldn't have learned that as a Pashup Shah in the Pesukim. The Chizkuni learned it because he had our Gemara, which indicated or implies that such an event took place, but not because he knew that from the Pesukim. So again, it's not clear from the Pesukim, but the Gemara assumes, or the Gemara has some sort of Mesorah, that in Sadanim in Mitzrayim meant that Yaakov was at some point buried in Mitzrayim, and then when he was removed and interred, he was interred in Mitzrayim and then taken out with the dirt of me. The Kamashir Tfusa. How much is Tfusa? Perish Rabbi Elazar. Okay, the Girsi here reads Rabbi Elazar, not Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, but Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who is the Amora. No telafar tichalach. He takes out the soft earth around it. V'chofer v'betulah. Then digs into the either bedrock or the hard dirt. Gimel etzbo, three etzbo. Why do you go three etzbo deep? What's the purpose of taking out the three etzbo? Because that's the assumption that within the three etzbo is absorbed in either the dam hamase, the blood of the mace, or the mohel hamase, the liquids that are come out of the mace, they're absorbed up to three etzbo's, and therefore when we remove the mace along with all these liquids that came out of the mace, in order to be metaher the makom, in order to clear out the place entirely, and also to move the mace in its entirety. So now, we have a question on Rabbi Elazar's position. How much is the shir tfusa? Perish Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok. This is the Tana. So this is a question on the Amora Rabbi Elazar. They bring from this brisa that is the brisa of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok. No tel et kismim be'et kosusot. When you're coming to remove a mace, you take the kismim and the kosusot. V'zoreket ha'vadayim. Then you throw away the vadayim and you echet ha'tzfekot. And then leave over the ones that are in doubt. V'ashar mitzarif. And everything else, it comes in, it's included the rope in Yenoshamet, the rope Asamot, the Malay Tavard Rekev. Right, so all these are included or taken away and included in these measurements. So what's happening in this Mishnah here? Now, first of all, what is the word Kismimin and what is the word Kisasot? Because we'll start with Kisasot are more widely agreed upon that they mean the clods of earth. Right, there's earth around here that has absorbed the liquids from the mace. So those are called Kosasot. Whereas kismin is not well defined here. There's a machlokes in the Rishonim what the word kismin means. The Mefarish over here says kismin are nisarim, boards that were used in the aron. It's the wood from the aron, shirkivu, that then decomposed or rotted along with them. So the kisim are kismin over here, or the kisim are the wood from the aron. The other possibility the Mefarish brings down that these are kismin shalatzei b'samim, that these are spices or things that they used to put on the mace to take away from the foul odor, and they used to put it on top of the mace, and that was also decomposed in with the mace. So you take those along with the mace. The other possibility, and I'm sorry, Tosfos over here brings down another possibility, what these kismin are, that's a aron shoshayish shenichtat. It was a marble aron that was cut up or chopped up. Now, the reason that they went with this interpretation we're going to see in a second comes from the remainder over here. Then he said, "Vizoreket avadayim," you throw away anything that's vadai. Vadai what? So here it seems to be that anything that's vadai tahor, something that is definitely does not have a part of the mace in it, doesn't have from the liquids of the mace, doesn't have from the aron in it, that you throw away, because that is definitely not tamei, and therefore you can get rid of it. Then you have certain items which are safek. We don't know whether they belong to the mace or not, meaning that like this dirt that might have liquid in it, or pieces of the aron that might be parts of the aron, all of those you take, and you put them into geniza. We remove them from here, because we want to remove the tum'ah from here. But they're not mitzaref. They do not join in to cause too much ohel with other types of measurements, shiurim, that we're going to see in a second, because we're not certain that they are part of the mace. Behashar, and that which is left over, mitzaref, that can come together. Whatever else we find from the mace, that is mitzaref, the rov binyanosho mace, or the rov asimot, or the malei tavad rekev. All these measurements that are required for a mace to reach this quantity, in order to be metame ba'ohel, everything else that you find there is included in that calculation, or adds up into those calculations. So the problem, obviously, for the perish of the mefaresh, is he said that either they were atzei b'samim, or they were wood from the aron. And we know already from the Gemara earlier on, that when you have an aron shel eitz that is mixed up with a mace, then you can't have that be rekev. And over here the Gemara is saying it's going to be rekev. So the mefaresh himself answers up and says, well, that's true if you want to make this to be rekev for this mace itself. But if you want to take some of the mace here and be mistarek to another mace, the rekev from another mace, that would work. You could take out whatever is purely the mace and put it together with rekev from another mace, and that would work. But the Ri obviously did not like that explanation. That's why the Ri clearly changed it to aron shel shayish, which is what the Gemara says over there. The only time you're going to have rekev is if the mace is buried directly in the ground, or buried in a aron shel shayish, is buried in a marble tome, because then the mace, that when it decomposes, does not absorb any part of the marble. That's why the Ri probably uses the marble over here. Now, what do you do? Elunot goes nam, you take them away and remove them and put them into geniza. So the Rosh over here says that shelo yitamu anogim behem. So nobody who touches them will come to me. Kismim, why do you have to remove the kismim over here? Mishum golel v'dofek, because the aron is like the golel v'dofek, and the aron is v'tameh, like the mace himself. So you have to remove them. Because the sos, the dirt around it that absorbs the blood, you have to remove, because that's absorbed from the mala mace. So you remove both of these items because they have a din of too much mace, and if you come into contact with them, they will be mitameh. Whereas the other items, where we know it's the mace itself, that could be even mitameh be'ohel. It's mitameh be'ohel, that can be mitzareh to all the other shiurim we have by too much ohel. So either way, what do we see from here? We see from here that how much you have to remove really depends on the area around you, whatever you can assume would belong to the mace, and whatever the safek that would belong to the mace. Not that there's an exacting word to this. Gemara says, no, Huda Marki Haitan Rabba Lazar holds like another Tana, which is what? The Tanya Vitamishur Tzvusa, Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishur Ben Azai. This is what Rabba Lazar holds like, no Telafarti Cholach, takes all the soft dirt, Bechover Vitulah Shloshet Zvot, and he goes into the hardened dirt, or the bedrock around it, Shloshet Zvot, and removes it, and that's enough to be Shir Tzvusa. So again, both you have two Tanaim that argue about what exactly the amount of the Tzvusa is around him. Right? There's one Tana, and Rabbi Lazar, who is an Amora, holds like that Tana, which is that you remove any soft earth around the mace, plus into the bedrock or into the hard earth around it, because then we're certain whatever you're taking out captures or encapsulates everything that came out of the mace. Whereas Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, defines exactly what it is, meaning that you can think. Things that for sure don't belong to mace, throw away. Things that are safek, you have to remove in order to remove the tumah, but they're not mitzaref to the shira of ohel, like van leitavad, rov asamot, and binyanin, and rov minyan, and rov binyan. Whereas there are other items where it's clearly part of the mace, that do include it, that are part of the mace, and they will include it in the shira, and that add up to the tumah tameh. So you'll have three different categories about what you need to do and what you need to remove. And that's what the Rosh also has, this alternative explanation of what the safek here is, that because it's the aron, and because it's the mole that's absorbed, these are tamei b'maglam and not b'masal, and therefore they're required to be removed, even though they'd have to be, quote-unquote, buried, right, with the mace, that'd be gondan, because you want to remove and be mitare this makom. Now, the Mishnah continues, bodeke menu, you check from this mace and onward 20 amot. Amar Rava, Badak Ufana, he checked and he found a mace, and he removed this mace. Badak, he was checking again, meaning he was continuing to do whatever he was doing. It sounds like here he was excavating, digging for some reason other than looking for maceim, and he had to bump into him, so he bumped into a mace, they removed it. Badak Ufana, then he bumps into a second mace, and he had removed it. Badak Veshkach, and then he continues to work, and he bumps into a third mace of this. Lohai Mefani Le Gabi Hanach Trey, Lohani Trey Le Gabi Haichad. When you reach this status already, we hit the third one. Now, the Mafre, we know that this is a Shkunat Kivarot. Since it's a Shkunat Kivarot, we don't allow you to move this last mate, because now we know that it's a Shkunat Kivarot, you're restricted from moving the mate. You have to leave the last one you found. But we also don't say that you have to either take this one and move them with the other two, or take the other two and bring them back. Once you've removed them, we don't say bring them back now, because you've already act, when you've removed them, you remove them beheter. Once you remove them beheter, we don't ask you to bring them back, once we find out, l'mafreya, that this was a beta kvarot, but it still impacts on the third one. Igad Amre, there are some that say that the statement of Rabbah goes like this, Amre Rabbah, Kevin, Shinitna, Rishus, Lifnot, Mifanevahom. Once you have Rishus to remove them, you can remove all of them, meaning that even the third one can be removed over here. So now the Gemara says, L'shavinu, Shkunat Kvarot. Why don't you say, once we found the third one, that it is a Shkunat Kvarot? If it's a Shkunat Kvarot, right, then, why do we allow you to remove this third mace over here? Once you have a third mace, why do we say all of a sudden that you can remove it once we know that it's a Shkunat Kvarot? Amar Reish Lakish, where it says, Ilamat, ooh, they found an excuse, V'tiaru et Eretz Yisrael. Whenever we have the opportunity to reduce the amount of Tumah in Eretz Yisrael because of Kohanim, Osef Pesach, Nizirim, and Ochlei Taros, we try to reduce the amount of Tumah that is here in Eretz Yisrael. And since you've already moved the first two Beheter, since you moved the first two Beheter, we allow you to move the third one in order, right, to stop this from being a Beit HaKvarot and expanding the Tumah to a much larger area. And now, again, why are you allowed to do this? So that's because we want to be in Tara Eretz Yisrael, and once we've allowed you to do somewhat of the Tara process by removing the first two Beitim, we allow you to clear out the third Beit. So this is, again, over here, comments, says the Ktav Kasha, Im Alochi, V'shem HaKozem in Alochi. He says, you know, this seems a little difficult. Why should you be able to move it? And he says, well, if it's Alochi L'moshim Sinai, fine. And he says, I mean, a lot of these dinim seem to be, or all these seem to be Alochi L'moshim Sinai, because there's not necessarily a logic associated with all of these halachot. Now, the next Gemara says, Badak, Umeyatrim Amah, V'lo Matzah. In our mission, it says that he checked for 20 amot, and then he didn't find anything. My, what's the din? Meaning that in our mission, is a requirement to check for 20 amot. What happens if he does check the 20 amot? What is the din once he's checked the 20 amot? So the question now is, what does that mean, once he's checked 20 amot? How many 20 amot did he check? Did he check 20 amot in all directions? And then just as he checked 20 amot in all directions, now we assume that this is a shkunat kvarot, meaning that that is an area of shkunat kvarot, and then we leave it there. Or do we say that since there's nothing else that we found here, that maybe, possibly, that he could remove it? So now we have different interpretations. I'll run through them in the Rishonim. The Mefarish explains like this, that what once you have a, you found these three, you've checked around the 20 amos, you haven't found anything else, what's the status? I'm going to say that the Shkunat Kvarot, that this is a Shkunat Kvarot, and we don't assume that there are any other Shkunat Kvarot in the area, and the tumah is limited just to this space. So my time, why do we limit it to this space, even though there's evidence that there's a beta throws here? Amar Zogesh, Ilah Matsu Mitaru Eretz Yisrael. Any excuse we can find to be Mitaru Eretz Yisrael, we will. And so too over here, we are Mitaher Eretz Yisrael, and we assume that this is just a Shkunat Kvarot. Tosfos, on the other hand, reads it like this. No, they checked to one of the directions. When he checked in 20 amot, he checked in one direction, and then he didn't find anything. Do we assume now that he has to check in the other direction, the other 20 amot in all the other directions? The Tosfos says, no, you don't have to check it. Why? Because it's a shkunat, right? He doesn't have to check anymore, because now we have a shkunat kvarot. Why doesn't he have to check anymore? Right? Because once we assume, or once you go in one direction, you can make it and say, nah, this isn't a shkunat kvarot. We don't try to test in any of the directions. We don't want to expand the amount of tumah in Eretz Yisrael. The last one is, right, the last interpretation that Tosfos gives is what happens, there's a requirement to dig down to, in any loose dirt, downward and around, to check that there are shkunat kvarot here. What happens if he checked the 20 amot, he didn't find it? Do we still require him to dig down until the bedrock in order to check for other meitim in that area? That's what the Gemara says, no, it's a shkunat kvarot, whatever's there is there, and we don't make you go dig down. The Rosh takes issue with each of these different interpretations, and therefore the Rosh brings his own interpretation down in the end. He says that there are questions on all of these. So nearly the far is Badak Lomatsa Mai Mibayale Immutalifnot Gimel Mikan Kodem Badika. right? Once you've gone check for the 20 amot, are we allowed to now remove them, right? Before we do any other checking. Shema marota yukan, tukanim nefarim. Maybe there were caves that were praised for kamim. Came in the badak, lo matzah, uvrara davar. Now, once you've checked, retroactively, we know that there's nothing else here. Shein kan shkunat kvarot. That's just these three and not a shkunat kvarot. You only bury people where there are lots of people buried. It's not just you're going to find three, you're going to find lots of people there. And therefore, what are the Gemara answers? No, are they shkunat farot? Upshitale. Right? Since we already found these three, and that's considered shkunat farot, that we are machzik as a shkunat farot, right? Even though you can't find any more. And therefore, they remain there and they remain tuma. And according to the Rosh, then there's no girsa in the end of Amar Ish Lakish, Yilam Matsu, Terah Der Tzor, because that's not relevant here. He's not Natariah. So the whole question is, once you've checked around them and you only had these three Meitim be found there, right, is that enough, or is that the only, therefore there really isn't the Shkunat Kvarot here, and you can remove it? No, Amar Menashia, no, this is a Shkunat Kvarot. Three is sufficient to be a Shkunat Kvarot. It remains Tameh. You can't remove it. But on the other hand, right, we don't say that the tumah is expanded, that we found a larger area, and we're not betahir this area. So that's the interpretation of the Rosh, and therefore you don't have this gears at the end, that betiaru at Eretz Yisrael. Alright, next Mishnah is a Mishnah in Negayim. It says, Kol safek Negayim b'tchilat tahor. If before you became tamei with Negayim, if there's a safek associated with it, you're tahor. Atul niskak l'tuma, right, once, that's only before you became tamei b'negayim. Mishnah niskak l'tuma, once you became tamei b'negayim, Feiko Tamei. Then it's Tafek is Tamei. What is the case here? The case is the Mishnah in Negayim. The case there is you have two individuals. There the Mishnah also mentions one individual has two Negayim on him. One Nega was the size of a gris, and one was in the size of a Sela. Coming at the end of the week, now they're both the size of a Sela. So one of the Negayim has grown, and the other one hasn't moved. They're stationary. So now we want to come to Mimetayim because someone had Pishayon. He had expansion of a Nega, which makes you Tamei. So we come, but we don't know which one of them it happened to, or we don't know which one of the two Negayim it happened to on one individual. That person remains Tahor, since he has not yet become a Mitzora, right? He doesn't have yet a status of Nega Tamei. We say Safek the Tahor, right? We go Safek the Tahor. Whereas if he's Tamei already, if he already had a Nega and he was already Tamei, so what happened here? Here's a case where they two individuals, or one individual with two Negayim, have a Nega the size of a Sela, then it grows. It grows. I'm sorry, one has the size of a Sela, one has the size of a Gris. And they both grow to the size of a Sela Ba'ot. So they both expanded. So now both of them are definitely Tamei, and we can make them Tamei. Then, one of them, they both retract to the size of a Sela. They now are minimized. They go back to being the size of a Sela. So one of them, one of those two Negayim, now has gone back to its original state. If it goes back to its original state, it's no longer Tamei. For the other Nega, it hasn't gone back to its original state because it has to shrink all the way to a Gris to be at its original state. What do we do with these two Negayim now? One of them is Tahor, one of them is not. We say over there, Safek with Tamei. We go that he is Tamei. Why is he Tamei mi Safek? Because he's already Nitzkaf Lutuma. Once he's Nitzkaf Lutuma, we have the case what? That it is Rekalayim Ladarbar. We have evidence that he's Tamei already, and we're going to assume that you're Tamei until you prove otherwise. That the Cheskas Tuma remains with you until you show us that it should be otherwise. So now the Gemara says, Nani Mile, how do you know this? So I'm going to review the Gemara Kra. The Pasuk says, Lataro, O Latamo, by Negayim, it says to make him Tahor, or to make him Tamei. Ho Pasuk Pasuk Lataro, the Pasuk began with Tahara, and then it went to Tamei. So that means anytime we have a Safek by Negayim, we're always going to go Latara. So the Gemara says, well, Yehach, Yafilish, and Yitzkaf Latuma. If we're always going to go Safek Lakula to be Tahor, then that should be true even if it's Tamei already. Now he's Safek Latar. So the Gemara says, alright, Elik Yitmar of Yehuda Marab Ahai. Gemara said on a different Mishnah. That statement of Yehuda Marab is on a different Mishnah. Ah, how do we explain our Mishnah? Our Mishnah comes from the Psukim that are brought down. The Rosh brings down that the Torah Kohanim brings down the Psukim, which tell us why is it that you are Tahor Tamei? Because it says, in Pashot Tivseh Ba'or, if it expands in your body, then the Kohen is the Tamei Oto. And the Drush and Torah Kohanim is Otova Dai. Only when you know for certain this is the one that expanded are you Tamei. But if it's the Misafei, then we don't say that it is Tamei. And the same thing with Tahara. It says, B'tiaro HaKohen. Right? When are you Mitara the Kohen? Only when he knows it's Vadai Tahor. Not when he knows it's Safek. So those Sukkim in Torah Kohanim teach us that when you are Tahor, to make you Tamei, we need to know for certain that this was a Nega Tamei. And the other way around, if you are Tamei already, to make you Tahor, we need to know for certain that this Nega shrank in order to make you Tahor. Ah, so now what is the statement of Yudha Marab? We are going in another Mishnah. What's that Mishnah? It says, in Baheret Kidma the Seyar Lavan, one of the indications that makes a Nega Tamei is if it has white hairs that grow into the Nega. So what is this? In Baheret Kidma the Seyar. If the Nega came before the Seyar Lavan, then you're Tamei, because then when the white hairs grew on it, That is a siman tuman. You became tamei. Im ter lan kodem la baheres. But if the white hairs were there prior to the nega, then they are not a siman tuman. Therefore, you are tahor. Safek. If it's a safek, then you are tamei. Right? Rabbi Yeshua Amar keha. Right? So my keha. What does it mean keha? Amar Yehuda keha v'tahor. It means keha, and he is tahor. So what does that mean, keha? So now we have to explain this gemara. So why is it the safek he is tamei? And Rabbi Yehuda argues that the safek he is tahor. So what we say? We say for the chachamim, we say safek tamei. We say since there is a baharet here, and this individual has a cheskas tum'ah, since he has a cheskas tum'ah in general, because we already have a nega there, we assume that the hairs came afterwards, because normally a person's hair is black. And if it's white now, it must be because this hair turned white because of the nega, and therefore you would be tamei. Mishnah says, no, keha, you have a suffix over here, unless you know bevadu'ut, this person is tahor, right? Well, I'm tamei, we don't make him tahor. So it's interesting here that the mid-art Bragmar brings down the word keha with a chaf, which means to get lighter, right, or to fade from its color, meaning that it's tahor because it's faded from its color. The Mishnah in Nigayim has kuf as the word. It reads keha with kuf, meaning that keha shenab, that his teeth used to, grind or burn or be soured by this statement because he believed that it should be tahor. Now, why does Rabbi Shua believe that is Shinab Kehot and believe that it should be Tahor? Because he believes that it's always, when we have a Safek by Nigayim, it has to be Tahor. And where does that come from? That comes from the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. The statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav is that Amakala Taro, O the Tamo, Ho Patrafo, Ho Patarat, Chila, we assume you're Tahor unless the evidence proves otherwise. And over here too, since it's a Safek, we're not going to assume that you are Tamek. Now, the Gemara clears this. First it says, Kiyavit Tahor. Vidilma meaning that kiha means that it faded and it's tahor. Maybe kiha means that it's faded and it's tamei. So it says yes, if it's tamei, then what's the difference between Rabbi Yeshua and the Tanakama? So we could say because the Tanakama believes that he's tamei misafek. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, when he says kiha, means tamei vadai. So Gemara says no, that's not the case because we have Rabbi Yehuda Rab, Amar Kala Taro Tamohu, Vatakwa Kadu, Batarat, Chila. We assume that it's Tara, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua says, well, that it's tahor, when he says kehai, he means that it is tahor. Again, either with a chaf and argument right here that it's faded, and it means tahor, or because of the kuf, the kiha sheinotav, that his teeth were, irked by this statement that it was tamei, and he said he checked it out, and it was definitely tahor. And the Gemara in Bava Tzimah also says that they had the same machlokes in Shemayim, whether it was tahor and tamei. And they said that Kadosh Baruch Hu said it was Tahor, and Malachim said it was Tamei. They said we're going to call on Rabbi Bar Nachmani, who was an expert in Nigayim, to come paskin. And they told the story there that he was finally captured by the Malachim Avos. And when he came up, when he died, he says Tahor, Tahor, as he died. And that was that he was Metaher. Number one, that Ashrecha, Mer Mechaini, that you are Tahor, Gufachcha, Tahor, and Torachcha, Tahor, that you paskin Tahor, the Gabe, this Machlokas. Okay, we'll stop here.